You know that exact that dopamine hit I'm talking about, right?
Totally. The blank canvas moment.
Exactly. You have this vague idea for an app. You open up an AI chat window and you just start typing, like, build me a dashboard with a sidebar. And 3 seconds later, boom, there is a working prototype right there on your screen.
It feels like magic at first.
It really does. So you just keep going. You're like, okay, make the sidebar collapsible, add a dark mode. Actually, you know what? Turn this whole thing into a multiplayer game. And for the first, say, 20 minutes, you just feel like an absolute wizard.
Right, you're just sort of riffing with the machine.
Yeah, like jam session jazz. You're just seeing what happens.
But I mean, as exhilarating as that feeling is, it is also the exact moment you are quietly laying the groundwork for just a completely catastrophic failure.
Yeah, and that phenomenon, you know, casually throwing prompts at an LLM and just tweaking the output on the fly, that's been dubbed vibe coding.
Vibe coding, right?
And for anyone listening who has pushed past that 20-minute mark, you know exactly how the story ends. The AI starts forgetting your earlier instructions. A tiny little CSS tweak suddenly breaks your entire database logic.
Oh, the cascading failures.
Yes. You ask it to fix one bug, and it confidently rewrites a completely unrelated module, which introduces like three new bugs. What started as this rapid prototyping sprint turns into this tangled, broken mess that you eventually just abandon because it is way too complex to unravel.
The irony of vibe coding is that the initial speed of creation completely blinds us to the compounding technical debt we're accumulating with every single prompt. Like, we mistake the generation of text for the generation of actual structural system architecture.
Which is exactly why today's deep dive is going to be so vital for you, whether you are a developer managing production code bases, a project manager trying to figure out these new agentic workflows, or honestly, just someone insanely curious about how humans are wrangling AI to do complex work. This deep dive will completely reframe how you think about AI collaboration.
It really is a paradigm shift.
It is. We are exploring a fascinating developer blog post from a series called Shipping with Claude Code, specifically part 10. The author became so exhausted by the limitations of vibe coding that they actually built a custom workflow. They call it the slash MTC skill.
DC, right?
Yeah. And its entire mission is to programmatically force the AI to architect, design, and critique a project completely before it is permitted to write a single line of production code. It's like we've been jumping into a car and just driving without a map. It's fun at first, but you usually end up lost.
Yeah, this isn't just about writing code faster. It's really about engineering discipline. It's about solving that fundamental human AI communication gap.
So to really get why this slash MTC skill is such a big deal, we kind of have to look at the inciting incident, right? Like, what inspired the author to build it in the first place?
Right. It started when the author was observing another developer, Cheng Chao. He was experimenting with an environment from ByteDance called Tray IDE.
Trey, okay.
And Tray has this specific operational mode built into it called MTC, which stands for More Than Coding.
More than coding. Got it. And Peng Chao actually used this MTC mode to build a fully functional puzzle game called ClassOS. And he did it from scratch in 2 hours with zero handwritten code. The AI just handled all the syntax.
Which is wild.
It's totally wild. But reading through the source material, what stood out to me wasn't just the 2 hour time frame, it was how that time was actually spent.
Okay, let's unpack this. If Trey is so amazing out of the box and it built ClassOS in 2 hours, why did our author bother building a custom slash MTC skill for Claude Code? Why not just use Trey? Well, the author really prefers Claude Code as their primary terminal environment. But they recognize that Trey's MTC mode, it isn't just a clever autocomplete feature you can just toggle on and off.
Right.
MTC operates as a fundamentally different philosophy. It acts as a full-stack autonomous orchestrator. It handles the design, the analysis, data generation, documentation. So the author wanted to port that exact methodology, that rigorous separation of design from execution, into their own preferred tool.
Okay, let's break down that methodology then, because the author's core thesis here really serves as the death knell for standard vibe coding. They state that MTC is literally everything before the code.
Everything before the code.
Right. When you look at Peng Xiao's 2 hour sprint, he didn't just say, you know, make me a puzzle game and let it rip. before any code was generated, he had the AI revise the narrative script 3 times. He forced it to generate 5 separate mock data files. He had it break down a competitive analysis matrix into 5 distinct dimensions. I mean, that is a massive amount of architectural pre-work for just a simple puzzle game.
But it's the only way to prevent that context window degradation we were just talking about.
Yeah.
I mean, think about the mechanics of why standard vibe coding falls apart. When a human starts with a vague idea and the AI just immediately starts writing code, that initial output is based on a highly localized context. Then, you know, 20 minutes later, the human pivots the concept, like, oh, let's make this multiplayer.
Right. So we effectively poured a concrete foundation for a 1-story house. We started framing the wooden walls, and suddenly I'm telling the builders, hey, I want a subterranean parking garage.
Exactly. That's a perfect analogy.
Yeah.
And because of how large language models process information, the AI doesn't inherently understand that it needs to tear down the house and rebuild the architecture.
It just tries to cram it in.
Right. Its context window is polluted with the historical chat log of the 1-story house. So it just grabs a shovel and tries to dig a parking garage straight through the living room floorboards.
Oh man, that is such a disaster.
It tries to patch the new concept over conflicting pre-existing data structures. And when the data structures fracture, the logic fractures. Every new prompt basically overturns the stability of the previous phase.
So the product you end up shipping, if you ship anything at all, isn't a cohesive piece of software. It's just this Frankenstein patchwork held together by duct tape and, like, increasingly desperate system prompts.
Yes, exactly. Which leads to the author's kind of golden ratio for this new workflow.
Yeah.
10 minutes of dedicated concept work saves 1 hour of rework later.
10 minutes saves an hour. Wow. So to guarantee that return on investment, the author structured their /MTC skill as a rigid, discrete state machine. It is broken down into a 6-phase framework. And the absolute strictest constraint here, I love this part, is that skipping phases is hard-coded out of the equation.
You literally cannot jump ahead to the fun part.
You cannot. Each phase produces a specific artifact, and that artifact becomes the foundational system prompt for the next phase. Let's walk the listener through these literal mechanics, because it highlights the difference between just chatting with an AI and actually engineering with one.
Yeah, let's do it.
So it starts at phase 0, which is context gathering. Interestingly, this is the only phase where no formal documentation is produced. It's purely about calibration. You're basically aligning on what is being built and for whom.
Right, getting the intent down. And once that intent is aligned, the workflow transitions to phase 1, which is concept and narrative. Yeah. You iterate the story from V1 to V2 to V3, and then comes phase 2, system design.
Okay.
This is where the workflow introduces the critical concept of externalized memory. So instead of allowing the AI to keep all these conceptual details floating dynamically in the chat history, the skill forces the AI to output formal, static markdown documents.
Like actual spec sheets.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The narrative goes into one file, the system architecture, you know, the mechanics, the state management that goes into another file.
Now, I can hear developers listening to this right now groaning at the word documentation.
Oh, for sure.
Because if I already know the concept I want to build, forcing an AI to write a formal spec sheet feels like unnecessary bureaucratic overhead. If it's just me and Claude working on this, why do we need an external paper trail? Why not just start coding?
Because human memory is incredibly fallible.
Fair point.
Especially when you get deep into the weeds of complex logic. 3 days from now, you're going to be looking at a specific mechanic the AI wrote, and it's going to feel slightly off from the vibe you originally had in your head.
Yeah, I've been there.
And without a locked design document, you have 0 baseline for debugging that failure. You won't know if your original concept was inherently flawed or if the AI just subtly drifted off course during the implementation phase because its context window got cluttered.
Ah, I see. So it's like a cognitive anchor. The AI's desk, so to speak, gets completely covered in messy code snippets and terminal errors over the course of an hour, so it literally can't see the original blueprint anymore.
Yes.
And the design doc acts as this permanent pin reference on the wall that clears the AI's cognitive load and resets its focus.
It completely resets the context window. When you feed that pristine phase 2 document into the next step, the AI isn't dragging the messy history of your brainstorming session along with it. It only sees the final, approved truth.
That makes perfect sense for maintaining stability. But going back to phase 1, the concept phase, there is a hidden mechanism in there that doesn't just maintain stability, it actually elevates the quality of the AI's creative output.
Yes, the forced self-critique.
Here's where it gets really interesting, folks. By default, large language models are basically yes men.
Totally. They are highly sycophantic. Mm. They're explicitly optimized during alignment training to please the user, which usually just means agreeing with whatever your first draft prompt is and rushing to type out tokens.
Right. If I give an AI a thoroughly mediocre derivative idea for, like, a platformer game, it doesn't usually push back and tell me my idea is boring. It just says, great idea. Let's start building the jumping mechanics.
Exactly. So to counter that, the /MTC skill introduces programmatic friction. After the AI generates version 1 of your concept, the workflow literally blocks code generation.
Yeah.
The AI is required to list 3 distinct conceptual flaws in its own version 1 design.
Wow.
Yeah, it has to propose 3 distinct narrative or mechanical directions to resolve those flaws, and then it just halts execution until you, the user, pick a path for version 2.
The author gives a brilliant anecdote about this in action in the blog. They were designing a game called Inside Job. They ran the initial prompt through phase 1, and version 1 came out looking, you know, fine. They called it solid but predictable.
Which is the hallmark of zero-shot AI generation.
Right. It works, but it's average. But under a normal vibe coding scenario, they would have just accepted it and started building a predictable game. Instead, the Force Critique found 3 specific issues with the narrative depth, proposed 3 totally different thematic improvements, and the author was so impressed they just said, combine all 3.
And the result was this rich 3-layer narrative structure that just wouldn't have existed without that forced friction.
It's amazing, but what fascinates me is the timing of this critique. If I want the AI to critique its work, why does it have to be isolated in phase 1? Why couldn't I just tell the AI to critique the game while it's actively writing the code in phase 4?
It comes down to cognitive load and task prioritization. If you ask an LLM to reflect on high-level narrative themes while it is simultaneously tasked with writing syntactically correct React components.
It's too much.
Way too much. The rigid constraints of writing functional code will completely consume its attention mechanism. It's going to prioritize resolving the immediate syntax error over pondering abstract narrative flaws. It will just keep writing code and compound whatever errors exist in the original idea. The reflection absolutely must happen in a vacuum.
A complete vacuum. So we've used this vacuum to create a brilliantly critiqued, bulletproof blueprint. The concept is locked. The system design is documented. Now we actually have to build the thing. Which brings us to phase 3, data and content, and phase 4, build. And this is where the workflow introduces a fascinating architectural trick to speed up the tedious parts, the deployment of parallel subagents.
Yes, this is where we see the transition from just a conversational chatbot to a true agentic framework. In phase 3, the project needs mock data. So for a game, that might mean generating hundreds of lines of mock chat logs, fake emails, realistic photo metadata.
And if I try to generate all of that sequentially in one chat window, I'm going to be sitting there for an hour. And honestly, I'll probably blow out the context window before I even get to writing the core application logic.
Exactly.
So I'm assuming the /MTC orchestrator is spinning up isolated parallel instances, kind of like background worker threads, to handle these tasks simultaneously.
That is the exact mechanism. Yeah. The main orchestrator reads the master design document from phase 2, and then it spawns multiple isolated subagents.
Right.
One subagent gets a prompt strictly limited to generating character chat logs. Another is only tasked with photo metadata, and they operate entirely in parallel.
Which exponentially speeds up the phase.
Right, but more importantly, it isolates the state. The subagent writing the chat logs isn't distracted or confused by the complex JSON structures being generated for the metadata. They stay focused.
It's a beautifully efficient division of labor, and the workflow uses that exact same parallel strategy in phase 4 for the actual coding. The main agent acts as the lead architect handling the integration, while subagents are dispatched to build individual front-end components in isolation.
Yep.
But that efficiency makes me wonder, if subagents are so incredibly fast and capable, why are we restricting them to the back half of the project? Why not spin up 5 subagents in phase 1, give them the initial prompt, and have them brainstorm the concept at lightning speed?
It's tempting, but the author has a very strict constraint against using parallelism during the conceptual phases. It hinges on the difference between design and execution. Phase 1 and phase 2 must remain entirely single-threaded.
Really? Why?
Because architectural design requires a unified, global view of the project. Splitting concept iteration creates absolute chaos.
Ah, I see. If I have 5 different architects designing 5 different rooms of a house without talking to each other, nothing is going to align.
Exactly. One agent might design a deep, tragic narrative arc for a character, while an isolated parallel agent designs a bubbly, arcade-style jumping mechanic for that exact same character.
The resulting system would be conceptually schizophrenic.
Right. Parallelism is phenomenal for execution, but single-threaded focus is absolutely mandatory for foundational design.
Okay, so once that design is locked, and the parallel subagents have built out the logic in phase 4, the workflow finally enters phase 5, Polish. This is dedicated exclusively to texture, so adding sound effects, refining animations, hiding Easter eggs, and the author enforces a strict freeze on new features here.
No new features allowed. If you discover you need a new core mechanic during Polish, you don't just ask the AI to hack it in. You have to trace back to phase 2, update the system design document, and flow the state changes back down the pipeline.
Which brings us to the ultimate question for anyone looking to adopt this framework. What is the actual return on investment? The author is highly transparent about the upfront cost here. Using this skill means you are committing to spending roughly 30 to 60 minutes purely on conversational pre-work and document generation before you even see a prototype.
Right. It's an investment.
And I imagine a lot of developers would argue that the whole promise of AI was supposed to save them those 40 minutes.
Sure. But AI excels at accelerating the physical execution of typing code. It cannot magically compress the time required for rigorous architectural thinking. Now, the author notes that for a tiny tweak to an existing app, this six-phase framework is definitely overkill. But for a net new project, the mathematical ROI is undeniable.
Like with Inside Job.
Exactly. The conceptual pre-work took 40 minutes. But because the AI was guided by a comprehensive global design document rather than reacting to localized line-by-line context, it saved them roughly 2 to 3 hours of agonizing debugging later on. The AI just writes better code when it has a global design.
Spending 40 minutes to save 3 hours of frustration is a trade I think any developer would make every single time.
Yeah.
It fundamentally proves that in the era of AI generation, good AI coding is actually just good AI planning.
Slowing down at the start is the only reliable way to speed up at the finish.
It's a profound shift in perspective. If you are listening to this and want to see this philosophy executed in real time, the author is actually chronicling their entire journey. They have an ongoing series titled I Am the AI Game Producer, and they are currently utilizing this exact setup to build 3 different games simultaneously. The documented results are genuinely incredible to read.
It really is a phenomenal case study.
Yeah.
But, you know, as we look at those results, this entire deep dive surfaces a much larger, almost philosophical question that I think you, the listener, really need to sit with today. Well, we are rapidly transitioning away from tools that simply act as high-powered autocomplete. We are entering a world where the AI is fully capable of meticulously architecting the system design. It can programmatically critique and elevate its own creative narratives. It can act as a project manager, spinning up and orchestrating a team of parallel subagents to execute complex tasks.
It's doing the abstract thinking and the mechanical typing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So if the AI is now successfully operating as the lead architect, the senior developer, the QA tester, and the internal creative critic.
Wow.
What exactly is the unique, irreplaceable role of the human vibe coder moving forward?
Wow.
If we jump into that car for the road trip of building software, are we actually the ones driving the vehicle anymore? Or are we transitioning into something else entirely, simply the passenger in the backseat, offering a final approving nod at the end of an entirely automated assembly line?